everybody wants to be successful. And I think what is misunderstood is that people don't recognize that success is a symptom. It's a result. It is not the cause. It is the effect. I believe that the willingness to be seen and heard are prerequisites for success in most cases. That willingness is going to conflict with the need for privacy, and that conflict has got to be resolved, or the stress is going to be debilitating. The need to express and the unwillingness to express is going to not only be debilitating, but frustrating to a person. To be human is to experience conflicts. We have these conflicts within ourselves all the time. We want to be loved and we want to be loving. We want to be connected to other people. We're social animals, and we want to be connected to things. We want to have things that make us feel good about ourselves. But on the other hand, we also want to be individuals. We want to be separate. We want to be independent of the magnetic pull of people and the demands that they cause or create or are a part of, so we can do what we want to do. So we want to be together and we want to be apart. And it is those kind of conflicts that we've got to deal with. We want to feel secure. We want life experiences to be predictable. A lot of people have a very high need for predictability and a very, very low tolerance for uncertainty. So if you recognize these kind of things that are going on in us, it makes it easier to navigate in life. We do want to have energy exchange experiences that make us feel good, that create comfort, that make us and our lives more convenient. This is standard. There's not new news here. But you turn around and go, it is the unknown, and sometimes, for some people, it is the unknowable that are really attractive. It's like, oh, that's what I want to deal with something I don't know how. I want to learn something new. I want to experience something that I've never experienced before. So taking risks can be stimulating, it can be exciting, it can be enlivening. So we're willing to forego predictability for this, what could be scary kind of experiences. Some of us would look at predictability as, oh, the same thing every day, same old, same old. That's boring. That's boring. And so we strive to avoid boredom. We'll even avoid boredom if it means we put danger in our own paths. We increase the risk. I personally don't like horror movies, and I wouldn't go see one. I wouldn't watch them on TV. But people do. They want this kind of stuff. They want to be have this level of stimulation. So, you know, like, do you want fear in your life every minute? No, of course not. But some people will like it because it's almost like a spice to them. If I look at privacy, we want privacy, which is nice, right? We wear clothing. We don't expose all of our thoughts, all of our feelings, all of our doings to other people. We're selective about that exposure. So we want that privacy, and which is another way of saying we want to hide part of ourselves, maybe a lot of ourselves, from what? Possible environments or environmental signals that could make us feel less about ourselves. If an incoming environmental signal comes and it diminishes us, if you just extend that idea out over time, you go diminish, 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 diminish. Oh my goodness, that's the path to death. I don't want that. Of course we don't. Of course we don't. For some of us, we recognize that, you know, if I can be seen or if I can be heard, then people could negatively react to me. They could criticize me, the way I look, the way I act, the way I sound. They could criticize me for the way I dress, the way I brush my hair, or don't brush my hair. They could, right? And we go, oh boy, to be criticized or emotionally or physically attacked is not a good thing. We will do a great deal of strategizing in an effort to avoid the possibility that people could criticize or attack us emotionally or physically. And if we've got experiences that incoming environmental signals, based upon experience, tend to be threatening, they tend to be diminishing, they tend to be critical, they tend to be denigrating, we're like, oh boy, I'm basically going to see a lot of those incoming environmental signals as being threatening. And if that's the case, of course I want to hide. I want to defend myself from that stuff. The challenge, of course, is in order to grow, in order to live life, we need to acquire energy. Being invisible is not the way to do it. We need to acquire energy. We do it by coming out of our mother's wombs and being capable of nursing at the breast. We need to eat food. We need to breathe. We need to take stuff. We play with toys. We get attention. We get hugged. We get loved. We gurgle and we learn that, oh, if I smile or gurgle, I get hugged more often than if I don't do anything or if I cry. And we get managed this kind of way. It's like, So, in fact, we must be seen and we must be heard and otherwise validated. It's built into the system. That's why we as children can make noises and move our arms and legs in an effort to get our needs met. If we were completely silent for the first 4 or 5 years of our lives, just think, we made no fuss, no mess. We just were born, and if our parents fed us, we lived. If they forgot about us because we were there silent in the bassinet or the crib, I forgot about that little baby. Oh, yeah, that was 2 years ago, and no survival. So being seen and being heard are necessary for our survival. If you think about this, just imagine this. I was watering a plant that looked like it was thirsty this morning. That plant, before it was blossoming and blooming in my courtyard, was a seed. But in order for a seed to start to open up, to start to grow, it start to come out of its shell, if you will, it needs to break that shell open so it can start to grow and get the energy it needs, moisture, nutrition, sunlight, warmth, and now it can grow into its full potential. That is, it can achieve its destiny as a plant, and it can flower and produce seeds for the future. I think the same thing is essentially true of a baby. A baby, I'm not saying the baby has to go full term in order to achieve its destiny. I think that's not necessarily true. But in most cases, a baby needs to come out of the womb in order to fulfill its destiny. So if you think of the womb as its casing, as its protective shell, and it is an area of protection, right, for its development, it's like, baby, you got to come out and be seen and heard. Makes a lot of sense to me. Because we deal, from a coaching standpoint, with lots of people who want to achieve success, it seems to me that so many people are experiencing stress because they want to do things and they want to have things, but they haven't figured out how to allow themselves to come out of their protective shell. I'll say it this way. They haven't learned how to be themselves. They're still within the protective shell. Like, I got to protect myself. I got to protect myself. At some point, in order to grow to your full potential, that shell has got to open. It's got to be dissolved. It's got to. And for a plant, we certainly understand that a water will cause it to soften and then germination to occur and growth will then follow. It's like, oh, wow. Well, I'm in this protective shell. I'm in this protective shell. Yeah, it's easy enough to point our fingers at parenting that we had as a reason we never developed, say, a sense of acceptance and maybe safety. And consequently, here we are trying to move forward in life, but it tends to be tentatively, if at all. Why? Because we're holding on to the shell. That shell, even though some animals, like a turtle or a snail or a hermit crab, have these shells, it's like, I bring my shell with me. It's like, dissolving that shell is really essential to our willingness to be seen and heard. It's easy enough to say, wow, if my parents had only nurtured me or praised me or accepted me or loved me or listened to me or taught me or fill in the blank, I would have been so much more capable of expressing my potential in the world. Yeah, I know. Me too. And I think maybe we could say, yes, I got it. The lack of parental nurturing, historically, is a valid explanation of past events. But here we are today, and we are the adults in our own lives. Our parents, if they're alive, are not really the main responsible person for nurturing us, helping us grow out of our shells. It's not our parents' job at this point. We're adults. That job falls to us. You go, okay, So even though I had negative experiences growing up, yep, didn't we all, it is now my need for positive experiences and your need for positive experiences that we could seek out those experiences, we could value those experiences, we can harvest the energy that's inherent in those experiences, and they're going to dissolve the prison of our shells. The shell, originally, is protective, but when it prevents us from growing when it's time to grow, it's not a protective device. It's an imprisoning device. So today, to be imprisoned in shells of self-protectiveness based upon fears that we have from childhood is to consign ourselves to prison. Like, oh boy, don't want to do that. No, we don't want to do that. That should not be our destiny if we can envision something better. People sometimes use the excuse of, I lack the credentials to be seen and heard. I can't really stand on the stage or the podium or, you know, author a book or teach a class because I don't have the credentials. That's an excuse to hold ourselves back. And I think all excuses are based upon, number one, a lack of awareness, and two, fear. And this excuse about lacking credentials is exactly that way. We tend to think in our society, you know, the thinking society, well, apparently we don't do much thinking because look at the condition of society. But anyway, in our society, we tend to think of credentials only coming from, say, successfully participating in a classroom environment. Oh, I graduated from elementary school. I graduated from junior high. I graduated from high school. I graduated from college. I graduated with a master's degree. I got a PhD, and these are my credentials. They've been bestowed upon me by my educational system. I'm certified here, certified there. All these people gave me the stamp of approval that tells me I am somebody. I think that is a marketing scam. It's of limited value in a lot of ways. It is simply consigning ourselves to go through somebody else's series of processing. If you go through my process, I will certify you as having gone through my process. It's like, oh, I'll go through your toll booth if you'll tell me I'm better on the other side of your toll booth than I was before I entered it. I will tell you that, and I'll give you a piece of paper to that effect. Oh, by the way, first of all, give me money. This is a toll booth. A lot of education is exactly that. So if we think that that makes us something, school bought credentials, like, this is not the best thing. I can remember at one point in my corporate career, there was a hiring phase where everybody was seeking newly minted MBAs, Masters of Business Administration. So here, these guys were coming, and you know what they could do? They could operate a calculator. No life experience, no anything other than being in a classroom and knowing how to apply certain theories and calculate them on these elaborate Hewlett-Packard calculators. And when they started working with other people, there was hell to pay. They didn't have any skills in that area. So I believe that credentials are really the result of life experiences that you and I have turned into knowledge and awareness. Nobody can bestow that kind of credentials on us. We earn these credentials by the mindful energy exchange experiences in our lives, and a lot of them, are through trial and error. Because if somebody said, if you do this, if you follow my recipe, you can make a loaf of bread, you can make a cake, you can make a sandwich, you can make a pie, you can make a fill in the blank, you're not really thinking. You're just following somebody else's previously thought thoughts. That's not really much of an experience. It's exploration. Exploration and experience. That's, human beings want to reach out and grow. I believe if you were born, you have credentials. If you've lived in any form of a family environment, family structure, you have credentials. It is my view that these kind of experiences confer the credentials. And perhaps it's the painful experiences are the ones that most legitimize our right and our need to be seen and heard. Like, wow, I thought I should hide that experience. No. That really qualifies you. If we saw pain and struggle and deprivation and anything else that we might have experienced in our lives, abuse or lack of love or you name it, and we saw that as peaks of a mountain that we've climbed or experienced, you'd go, oh, that's different. Because a lot of people think, oh, I had bad experiences, and they minimized me. No, they didn't. You've got it backwards. They don't minimize us. That's just a perception. The fact is, it's an experience. The person with the most experience, and that's how that slogan, you know, the man with the most toys at the end of his life wins, that's nonsense. Most experience, the most joy, the most awareness at the end of our lives, that's the person who's winning. That's the person who's being successful, gaining these kind of experiences. So without the knowledge of pain, can you imagine going to somebody? Have you ever experienced pain in this area that I need help or coaching or guidance with? No, not at all. So what's your advice? Don't worry, be happy. Not much value there. It's those people would make terrible guides, terrible coaches, because they have no reality on what normal human beings are experiencing. It's like going to somebody who is perfectly physically fit, who you want advice on how to lose weight or gain weight or get into. They go like, just do it. Just, you know, I don't know why you're making such a big fuss about it. Just do it. That's it. That's the only advice you can offer. Yeah, because they have never actually traveled that path. What could they tell you about the path? It'd be goofy. It's like, oh, and if you haven't experienced it, where's this knowledge come from? Oh, I saw it on a video, or I read it in a book, or somebody told me about it in a classroom. No thanks. That's not what we want. And furthermore, if we haven't had pain, we wouldn't have any kind of compassion. I don't think you're going to get compassion out of a book or a movie. You're going to have the experience that leads you to being compassionate. One of the worst strategies when it comes to self-assessment, trying to judge who we are, who am I? I want to know who I be. Well, I'll tell you what, you don't want to do this. Compare. Comparison is a terrible strategy. It's unfair to compare uniqueness to a distinctly different version of uniqueness. Well, I compared myself to, yeah, but uniqueness compared to uniqueness, how is that going to work for you? Not very well. But the ego would have us do that. And the ego is going to tell us in that comparison, you know what? You know what? You're inferior to the other person. Or it's going to say, you are superior to the other person. And then the ego, using that information, unceasingly drives us onward like a person with a cattle prod or a whip. It's like, oh, wow, if I'm inferior, I got to do all kinds of things in order to compensate for that. Or if I'm superior, I have to do all kinds of things not only to maintain that superiority, but to do everything I can to make other people inferior. Wow, what a trap that is. That inferior, superior structure is false. And it causes us to ricochet back and forth, between these two states. They're both fear-driven, and they're driven also by non-acceptance. I got to be better. No, I'm less. I'm more. I'm less. I'm more. I'm less. Like, whew, that's tiring. That's tiring. There's no peace when you play that game. And that false sense of superiority is akin to the state of fight. In fight or flight, I think I can dominate these other people. I can dominate this situation. I can dominate this context. I can dominate these, Except, as soon as the end of that sentence arrives with a period or an exclamation point, the awareness that, I have a feeling that I can expect somebody even more superior than me can come along and dominate me, or a situation more powerful can dominate me. So we're trapped in this pinging back and forth. And I think the false sense of inferiority is, wait a minute, we got to get out of here. We have to avoid this situation. We got to run from it. We got to flee. If we can be invisible, if we can avoid being seen or heard, that's going to make us safer. But just think, if we're invisible to threats, if we can avoid being seen by threats, we're going to be safer. One of the favorite sets of books that I have was the Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East. And it talks about a concept somewhat related to this. So they're sitting around the fireplace with some masters one night, this a group of Americans that had traveled over to Tibet, China, and India over 100 years ago. And at night they're sitting around the campfire, and in walks another master followed by a tiger. And the Americans were like, oh my God, and they got frightened. But the master who walked in with the tiger said, if you're not afraid, he's not going to be able to see you. He's not hungry. He's not interested in eating you. And it is your fear that will be attractive to him. You don't want to do that. You can stay out of fear. So this idea of fighting and fleeing really require us to embrace fear in a big way. In one case where we think we can dominate the threat, in the other case where we think the threat can dominate us, so we have to run from it. There is another choice. You know that the willingness to be seen and heard is not standard throughout your life or my life or anybody else's life for that matter. It varies according to context. We're in in a certain environment or in a certain situation, we feel very confident. We're willing to be seen. We're willing to be heard. But in another one, we're like, oh, no, no, I got to be silent. I don't want to take a risk saying the wrong thing, seeming to be silly or goofy or not knowing how to act or, you know, so I'm not willing to be seen and heard in that kind of context. And if we've experienced pain for being seen or heard in early school situations, that's a biggie, or even in family situations. It is this public situation of school, though, that for a lot of children is like anything that happened from the earliest year in school up to, you know, say they graduated from high school, where there was a embarrassment or humiliation or taunting. That stuff can be devastating to our identity and make us incredibly sensitive and unwilling to be seen or heard. So if those early experiences of, I'll say, emotional pain, maybe even physical pain, if we've gotten hit or beaten up, that create deep impressions on us. So, okay. But this is what we do with experiences. This is part of being a human being, and I'm certain it's true of animals. This is how they know how to ring bells and learn to drool at the ringing of a bell or experiencing other things in the lab experiments, is we try to understand how the pain was caused. I experienced pain when I was, fill in the blank, 4 years old, 5 years old, 6 years old, all those years old. And what caused it? And children and many adults will say this. This is their question of inquiry. What did I do wrong? There's a presupposition that I did something wrong. First order of business was not, wow, I must be in the environment of people that are really unaware in that they don't know how to protect a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old child. I must be involved with really unaware teachers that would embarrass or humiliate a child who is obviously not paying attention or doesn't know how to answer this question up on the blackboard, and this is going to result in humiliation. If a teacher is sensitive to that, that pain is not going to occur. But we don't think of these people as being emotionally deficient or unaware because they're big people. They're big, powerful, powerful people. So what did I do wrong? And if we link pain to our doing something wrong, we're going to shy away from doing something at all. You're like, uh-oh, okay. A lot of us, and hopefully most of us, have active imaginations. It's an amazingly creative power designed into us. So we can imagine doing all kinds of things. Some of those things are not so good. Some of those things are outright bad. Some of those things are great and wonderful and moral. And if we're at all self-aware, we're like, wow, I've had some thoughts about doing stuff that, ooh, I'm glad nobody can read my mind. And then we go, gee, if they could read my mind, they would know that I'm thinking totally unacceptable things, and I would be shunned, I'd be expelled from the family, from the group, from school, from society. Even though everybody else is having similar thoughts, same type, this wide range of possible thoughts that human beings have. We're like, oh, I don't want anybody to know how I'm thinking. I've got to be the only person in the world who thinks like this. Not so. Not so. I have a series of questions, I think, that could be used in this kind of an inquiry to set ourselves free. And it's statements. And then we could look at the various things that pop up in our awareness. I did something wrong. Every one of us has thought that. Maybe many, many times. I got away with doing something wrong. I almost did something wrong. And I didn't express myself, and save me tremendous embarrassment, just because I didn't. I held my tongue or I wasn't seen in that situation. And so that kind of a statement would be, I almost embarrassed or humiliated myself by doing something wrong. You go, ooh. And as a child, I was told I did something wrong. And sometimes when people told us we did something wrong, they did it in the unkindest, the cruelest, the most demeaning, most damaging way because of their own lack of emotional awareness. And they used a sledgehammer, of metaphorically, on a child as compared to educating us. Let me make you more aware. No, that's not what happened. Let me slam you for you saying that or you doing that. I think those five sentences or so, and we could expand those to be many more, but if we could look at those sentences and use them to come into contact with the energy patterns that up to this point we either are denying or we know they're buried in our closet. They're in our inventory. I remember. I don't want to look at them. I don't want to think about them. The trouble is, those energy patterns are like seeds. We need to bring them out, dissolve them, not let them grow, but dissolve them. Burn the seed, as the Maharishi would have said years ago. We burn the seed so it can't grow in our lives. But if we're walking around with this inventory of, it's not like a seed. It's almost like an explosive device. I've got this explosive device, and I'm so afraid if I'm talking or if somebody sees me, they're going to recognize it, and all of a sudden I'm going to say or do something wrong, and then we hold ourselves back. We hold ourselves back. They affect our willingness to be seen and heard, and we can heal those. Holding ourselves back or hiding ourselves in shame. Let's go to Genesis, right, with Adam and Eve. Well, they ate the apple. Now they're shameful. They're hiding themselves. Christ would say this feeling of loss of privacy, being born into physical form, comes with the territory of being born as a human being. Just like abandonment and insecurity. And we go, oh, okay. So if we look at it and say, okay, I've had these experiences, and spiritual growth is really my goal, it becomes necessary for us to accept ourselves as human beings. Gee whiz, guess what? I didn't do everything perfectly. No kidding. You know why? Because I'm a human being. Okay, well, if I can love myself and accept that I'm a human being, maybe I can release the brakes of and this fear of, I'm afraid to express myself. You might recognize I'm an imperfect human being. That's actually redundant. Imperfect human being. They're the same. If you're a human being, you are imperfect. End of story. Oh, it's like, oh, am I the only one? No, you're part of everyone. We're all like that. So if we could allow ourselves to fully explore and express our potential and go, guess what? Trial and error. Having experiences, learning from this, adjusting. Yep. In order to do that, it requires increased willingness to be seen and heard because that's the way we have experiences. And if we can get into the place where we look back and say, you know what? My energy exchange experiences are my assets. And then we can mine our lives for the value of those experiences, like a person who says, I've got a gold mine, I've got a diamond mine, and I can mine for these precious, precious energy forms. Your life is like that. My life is like that. The value is there in our experiences. We just need to uncover it, demonstrate it so it can be seen, and speak about it so it can be heard. A diamond, never seen, never discovered, never found, doesn't have much value. We are valuable as diamonds in proportion to our willingness to be seen and heard. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. Frankly, we wish and want that we would reveal the true reality of ourselves to us. Like, oh, if I really got who I was, I wouldn't be hiding so much. No kidding. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. If we were fully illumined, we would also be radiating light out to other people. Guess what? We would be seen and heard more. Okay, I like that. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know that you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal, loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.